is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. It's Monday, which means we check in with the folks from Marketplace for the latest financial news. Joining me on the line from D.C. this time is Marketplace reporter David Gura. David, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So the unemployment numbers came out on Friday, and I would say it's fair to assume that there was some great anticipation about this, since these were the first numbers after the election and so much focus had been on those numbers during the election. And it was down because everybody said it was going to be bad, David. So first, what was going on there?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think there was a lot of attention on these, maybe a little less pressure on them. I know during the election in October, there was a lot of pressure to on the administration, especially to see if those numbers would still creep down. But yes, we got word that there are still 12 million Americans out of work, but the unemployment rate is at 7.7%. And we added about 146,000 jobs in November. So that's good news. It was mixed news, however, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, it's mixed because even though, and this is what's so contradictory about this and weird, is that the numbers went down, but the analysts are saying, and folks like yourself are saying, it means that there are more people that just stopped looking for work.
Right. So, you know, when we think unemployment, when you or I think that, who's unemployed, it's a person who's out of work. But the peculiarity of this is how the Labor Department defines the word unemployed. And so they do that as someone who's jobless or looking for a job and available for work. And we get that read in these reports. But there's another category. And those are people who are, as you said, out of work but no longer looking for work. And there are plenty of critics of how the Labor Department does this who say, when you present these unemployment numbers, we're not getting the full picture. There are still hundreds of thousands of Americans who, yes, technically are unemployed. They're just no longer in a position to be looking for work.
And David, I have to say, David Gura from Marketplace, I don't know how they calculate that. How do they calculate I just stopped looking? Can you give a little insight as to, you know, where they get these numbers from?
Yeah, so there's a sophisticated formula here that I wouldn't pretend to know perfectly, but they do this by survey. So you think, you know, how does the Labor Department figure out who's out of work? I mean, we do a census every few years, and that's a huge undertaking. We can't do that every week or every month. So it's done in survey form, and they call, I think, about 60,000 houses, plug those results into this formula, into this computer, and come out with the results.
Okay, here's something else that's a little bit confusing. So after these latest numbers came out, but the numbers before in the last couple of months were also adjusted because I guess in the moment you get what you get, but then they were able to go back and do a finer evaluation. And in fact, I guess the numbers were worse in the months leading up, but still the overall rate was at 7.9.
Right. So this is something that, as you mentioned, you know, happens all the time. Every month these numbers are revised, they're readjusted. And you know, this month, I think a lot of people were wondering what effect Hurricane Sandy was going to have on unemployment. And it turns out, I mean, the Labor Department puts out this report. It's thick. It's like 30 pages. And on the first page, there is this statement with sort of a black border around it saying that, you know, these response rates in the affected states were within normal ranges, and our analysis suggests that Hurricane Sandy did not substantively impact the national employment and unemployment rates for November. So I think that was a surprise to a lot of economists. There are plenty of people who are thinking, you know, when we get the next jobs report in January, the numbers for November might be revised to sort of reflect what's happened with Hurricane Sandy and with other factors.
That's it would seem to me that would make sense because it just doesn't. I can't figure out how that doesn't have any impact. It was so huge.
Well, we saw like a little. Sorry to interrupt you. I mean, we saw this little element of that. I mean, they break down these numbers in tons of different ways. And if you looked at construction, that was a sector in which employment was down, and that could give some indication that maybe that was because of Hurricane Sandy.
All right, so. We're in the holiday season where most people have said, according to surveys, I've talked to actually some of your colleagues about this, they're going to spend at least $700, those who have money and who are working,
on
Christmas gifts. What, because you spent
$1,000?
No. No. Just checking. But anyway, people are out spending, and that means that the stores have had to employ folks. So did seasonal staffing, does that have any impact, or is that, again, something we won't know until January?
Yeah, we see this year after year that around the holidays, stores will hire new workers. They'll hire part-time workers just to deal with people coming to the stores buying gifts. And so in this report, we saw in the retail sector, 53,000 jobs were added. And if you look at the last 3 months together, almost 150,000 jobs were added. So we are seeing that bump that we see pretty much year after year.
All right. So what needs to happen to keep this 7.7 at this rate without having more people not looking for work be included in that figure in January? In other words, what would be a good solid number that would suggest economy is improving and it's not, the rate is not resting on a lot of people who just have stopped looking?
I'd be reluctant to say one specific number myself, but I think that what people want to see is this number continue to go down. So that means we just have to see more new jobs created. And you look at critics of the administration in particular, they're saying, we had about 150, 160,000 new jobs in November. That's still not a lot of jobs in the grand scheme of things, and more needs to be done. I'd say in fairness, I think both Democrats and Republicans are saying the same thing. So, yeah, looking forward, what we want to see is just continued movement in that trajectory.
And would you assess, even for those people who are in the added job group, they've gotten a job finally, can we calculate in that number how many people are part-timers? Because these days there are people working two jobs, but they're both part-time. They're not, you know, it's not a person working one full-time job that might come with benefits and some other things.
You know, I don't have those numbers handy, but I think that we can calculate that. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people are doing that. And one other thing, you know, as we're looking forward here, you mentioned the fiscal cliff here at the top. I mean, I think there's still this element of uncertainty that sort of pervaded these numbers for a really long time now. And, you know, that's more on the employer side than on the employee side. But, you know, I think that there's still some concern or worry about what's going to happen. And that's affecting, you know, how many people are hiring.
Well, let's talk about that, because people are tossing around fiscal cliff lightly. I think they were. And I think we all thought, I mean, maybe I did. OK, they'll get something together because it's too scary. Well, now it's really scary. Now, you know, what, 20? I don't even think. How many days do they have to get
well,
this straight?
It's like, you know? I think it's less than a week in terms of scheduled days, what the House and the Senate have scheduled. But yeah, they have until the end of the year. And those of us here who are hoping to maybe get out of town around Christmas time are wondering if we're going to be stuck here reporting on this still. So yeah, I think your sense of it is right. I mean, I think that whatever confidence people had that something was going to happen here quickly has sort of vanished.
And David, would you just outline, because I think it's very important every time we have this conversation to put some real scenarios on the table for people to understand. So you hear the expression fiscal cliff and you go, OK, so I know they're fighting about that $250,000 people, you know, want to make sure they keep their rates down. But what does it have to do with me, who is not making $250,000, and what will it mean for me? And we've heard sort of vague terms that some people's taxes will go up $1,000, $2,000, but explain to us in some real terms what kinds of programs could be impacted for real beginning January 1st.
All right, so this is, the fiscal cliff has all this stuff sort of balled into one bad metaphor, I think it's fair to say. And as you mentioned, taxes are part of that, but you know, the consequences are real if we go over this cliff, just to keep playing with the metaphor there. You know, if the end of the year comes and there is no agreement, and there'll be these automatic spending cuts, and those are going to hit pretty much everything, not everything. I mean, certain things are protected, like Medicaid, Social Security, pay for service members, veterans benefits, things like that. But, you know, we would be looking at about $109 billion a year in cuts for 9 years. And in terms of how that would affect you or me, I mean, that's going to hit health programs and education programs, crime prevention programs, national parks, all this stuff. And, you know, the other half of those, you know, many billions of dollars worth of cuts would affect the Defense Department. And we just got word last week that finally the Pentagon is going to be able to start planning for how they're going to parcel out those cuts. Up until then, they've sort of been proceeding as it's business as usual. And they knew that there's the potential for these cuts. But, you know, they hadn't been given the go ahead from the White House to start go ahead and making plans for what they're going
to
do.
Well, give us some examples of what they have to make plans for now.
I mean, That budget is so huge, and you know, we think of the Defense Department, for instance, we think of weapons programs. There's so much that goes into training, people in the Air Force on how many hours they're flying planes, people in the Army how many hours they're training on tanks. All of that stuff could get hit. And so when people talk about these cuts being done with a really blunt instrument, that's a pretty fair assessment that, you know, they'll have some leeway to say, okay, maybe we want to everybody who's going to be trained on a tank, maybe we'll use the same amount of people will be training on tanks, but we'll, you know, reduce the number of hours. That's one choice. The other could be maybe we'll just reduce the number of people who get that kind of training. So it's kind of, in their view, not good either way. But everyone in the Defense Department and across the federal government is going to be having to deal with some really tough decisions.
And you're talking about, as you said, a huge organization when we speak about the Pentagon. And even though those cuts would be significant and have some resonance there, it's nothing like senior citizens, home care workers. These are some folks who are today, David Gura, meeting at Faneuil Hall here in Boston at a rally to protest the fiscal cliff because there's petrified of how they will be impacted on January 1. These are not folks who have, you know, the senior citizens have a fixed income. The home care workers, as you know, are not paid with big checks. So this is what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we can be kind of blasé about this. We can roll our eyes at what's happening here, and some of that is deserved. I mean, I think that the sort of slow pace, perhaps annoying pace at which Congress is moving gets to us. But, I mean, real things are at stake here, as you mentioned. And, you know, plenty of people, including the president and his administration, have said, for instance, the Defense Department needs to cut its budget, and they had laid out plans to do that. This would do that a lot more quickly and again, a lot less precisely than the administration would want. But, you know, you talk about these other programs, maybe they would not, under normal circumstances, been hit as hard. You know, people have cause to be worried. They're wondering what's going to happen and if they might sort of be collateral damage in whatever happens here in D.C.
All right. So what we've heard is that, and you're in D.C., so you've got your ear to the ground, that now with Speaker Boehner and President Obama closing the door, kicking everybody else out, having real conversations and coming out, not leaking what they talked about, mm-hmm. that this is a good sign. Erskine Bowles, who was part of that whole Simpson-Bowles proposal, which didn't get picked up in terms of how to reduce the deficit, is saying this is a positive sign. This is good. We're moving in the right direction. But here's one group of people. I don't see how, even if they come to some last-minute agreement, can be helped. And those are the people who are on federally funded extended unemployment benefits. That runs out December 29th. Can you tell me, is there a way that even if they come to an agreement that that machinery that's already in place to cut them off can stop? Or are they just, there's no way for them. They'll have to wait until next year and hope that they can survive until maybe, you know, they get some more help.
You know, this is a great unknown, and I'm really happy that you brought it up, because I think that when we have these conversations about the fiscal cliff, I think it's one aspect of it that's not talked about a lot. I think we tend to talk about tax rates. We tend to talk about the deficit writ large. But, you know, it was a couple of years ago during really the darkest parts of that recession when Congress passed this extension of long-term unemployment benefits. And that means that if you're out of work for longer than 27 weeks, I think the government's going to chip in some money and help you make ends meet. And Congress has renewed that a couple of times. And as you said, it's about to expire again. And there are lots of people who rely on these benefits. Like, just to circle back to that unemployment report we were talking about, I think I saw that 4.8 million Americans are considered long-term unemployed. In other words, they've been out of work for 27 weeks or longer. That's a big quantity.
Yep.
I think it's, you know, 40.1, I jotted it down here in my notebook, 40.1% of Americans who are unemployed have been unemployed for a really long time. And I was looking just at the Commonwealth, looking at Massachusetts. I think there are 45,000 people there who are long-term unemployed. That's 20% of those who are out of work. So this is a very real issue. And again, I think it's sort of, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But it is something that could affect an awful lot of people here in the United States.
And finally, David Gura, what can you say to people who say, I cannot hear this anymore? They just round and round fiscal cliff. Yay, no, not talking. It's just so tedious. And I just can't figure out why I should be paying attention to it until something happens.
You've heard that too?
Well, you know, one of my colleagues here is saying it a lot. She's like, okay, give me a break. When is something going to happen? Yeah.
I'd say again is that, you know, the stakes are very real. We've talked about some of the things that could get cut, that might get cut, and, you know, what could be affected even just by an agreement here. And that's the future of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. We're talking about tax rates, what will happen to government spending. These are all very big issues. But I think that you're picking up on something that indeed I think a lot of people are picking up on, which is, I think people are really tired of just how tedious this has been as it all plays out. And people have called this sort of a created crisis that Congress hasn't been doing its job. And, you know, I think there's something to that. It struck me, you were talking about that meeting between President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner. And, you know, it was considered widely a good sign that they met face to face and we didn't learn anything coming out of that meeting. I mean, it had been, I think, a month since the two of them had met face-to-face. And they've had a couple of phone calls, and that just strikes me as so crazy that, you know, clearly everyone agrees that there is so much gravity to this, there's so much on the line, and it's so difficult for these two principals to get on the phone with each other or to meet with each other. And I think it's just sort of emblematic of the way that business in Washington has changed. And I've been here a number of years now, and what I've seen is that, you know, things – people come to like small deals. They're, you know, they could come together and make a big deal. That doesn't happen. There's just this tendency to do what they can to get by. And then there's this sort of pie in the sky hope that in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, we'll get together. We'll figure something out that'll be a bigger change. But that just seems to be the way things are getting done here in Washington. And you, me, everybody, I think we're all frustrated by the fact that it's taking so much time and it seems like it has gotten so tedious.
The old kicking the can down the road. Yeah. That's
I tried not to say it.
Yes,
you did.
Well, you know, that's so people will recognize it. Well, thank
Absolutely.
You so much for talking to us, depressing as this news is.
Yeah. Well, Callie, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. We've been talking about the fiscal cliff and the latest unemployment numbers with Marketplace reporter David Gura. David, I think you're going to be working late this month. Sorry.
Sad but true. I think yeah. you're right. I think you're right.
And thank you again for joining us. And you can catch Marketplace weeknight nights at 6 here on 89.7 WGBH. How do we define what art is, and how do we decide what art gets federal funding? These are big questions, which the one-woman play Chesapeake takes on. WGBH's Jared Bowen will be bringing you that story. I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio.